postpartum body odor. It is a totally natural phenomenon because your body chemistry changes after giving birth. And so sometimes that means that what worked before is no longer effective. But I am excited to say that now there is a solution for that stubborn odor. The Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is a completely natural deodorant made by a postpartum mom who went through it herself. And it works by eliminating and preventing bacterial body odor without covering up your skin's comforting smell to your baby while giving you 12 hours of odor control. And let me tell you, it actually works. Here at the house, we've all been trying it and loving it. Now, before you think, ew, you're sharing a deodorant with your husband and daughter, let me explain that this full body deodorant comes in a convenient pump applicator that lets you apply it anywhere on your body with no bacteria traveling on the deodorant, so no ew involved. We also love that the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant has a delightful natural scent of USDA certified organic extracts that smell like a pink sugar cookie with lemon frosting. I thought this would be a little strange, but it's actually amazing. Also, the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is free from artificial fragrances and any kind of senoestrogens or herbs that can interfere with breastfeeding. Find your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant at postpartumdeodorant.com. That's postpartumdeodorant.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off through the month of May. Get your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant now at postpartumdeodorant.com and start smelling more like yourself again. Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane Crop Cashmere Cocoon Cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Hey, mighty parent or parent-to-be, welcome to Birthful. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today we are starting a new series where we're going to explore what birth may feel like for you. Now, if you've checked out our first series on models and places of birth, you already know that the typical media portrayal of birth, with all that drama of things going from 0 to 100 the minute your bag of water releases, yeah, that is pretty much a lie. Birth very, very, very rarely happens like that. And in fact, it can show up in a multitude of variations, with each birth being unique, even when it's the same person giving birth again, right? Like for a second birth or a third birth, fourth birth. Now, as a side note, a whole labor and birth process that could fit into a 30-minute TV episode would be so intensely overwhelming that it's really a good thing that's not how it happens. Okay, So since birth can be so unique, exploring what it may feel like for you is kind of a tricky proposition. I mean, who knows how it's going to go, right? However, there are enough commonalities for us to be able to explore it from several different viewpoints, and that's exactly what we're going to do through this series. You're going to find that some of these viewpoints are going to overlap, some will build on each other, and some may even hold a bit of contradiction. The reason we're going to present you with all of this is so that you can have a very broad understanding of what you may feel, and then lean into your curiosity to further explore the viewpoints that most resonate with who you are and how you approach the world. We've called this series Birth Beyond the Clinical Experience, and to start us off, the amazing Wapio Diane Bartlett is here to walk us through her holistic stages of birth, which she created in order to reframe the process of labor in a language that best describes the journey of birth. Wapio is an independent elder midwife and founder of the Matrona, which offers transformational programs in the realms of quantum and holistic birth, healing, and wisdom keeping. The Matrona advocates the return of birth to the family, soul-level connections between the birthing person and their team, and an understanding of altered states of consciousness relevant to childbirth. I do need to give you a heads up that this is going to be a two-part episode because there was no way we could do these stages justice in just one. So today is part one that is going to take us from getting ready to go into labor up until what is usually talked about as transition. And then we're going to have our own rest and be thankful phase before getting to part two of the episode. Of course, if you're listening to these episodes after they've been posted, then you can just go straight from one to the other. You're listening to Birthful, here to inform your intuition. Wapio, welcome. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you, Adrienne. Same, same. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, I'm so happy we can make this happen. Why? Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us a bit about how you came up with these stages and what motivated you to do so?
I sure would love to. All right. So going back, I had my first child in 1981 at home, and then I had another child at home and became a midwife back in the 80s, really. All right. And when I was a young midwife, I realized, hey, I am part of this beginning midwifery renaissance on the planet, and I was so excited to be part of that. And as I went to births for a number of years, I realized that even though midwives have been really very powerful in helping women reclaim the normalcy of birth, I realized that we are still using the same old, very clinical medical language to describe birth. And I said, we need to change that. If we want to change the pattern of something, all right, in this case, birth, well, maybe we need to change the language. And I also felt that describing labor in the very practical ways of stages and so on, and that it's perfectly wonderful in that it's practical, but it doesn't really describe what I feel most women are experiencing during their labor, and that is a transformation. So I have tried to reframe labor in the language of a transformative journey. And back in the 90s, all right, in the mid-90s, I believe, I presented this to the public as a paper, okay? And I've had many, many people call me, email me, and say, this is it. This is what I've been looking for. And I also want to just make one other statement, that is that this has nothing to do really with where you have your baby or with whom you have your baby. This is something that women told me they experienced in hospitals, they experienced with their OB, they experienced at home with their midwife, they experienced through an unassisted home birth or something like that. That's kind of the backstory and the history and the reason why the holistic stages of labor were born, really to change the pattern, change the language.
And that makes total sense to me, because it's so true that when we get obsessed on how dilated you are or how, you know, have you dilated a centimeter in an hour, all these boxes we need to check. You're right. We're talking on medical terms, but we're talking on terms that are just measuring and prodding and collecting data in a process that should be more seamless. So we're breaking it up too much, I find.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I like to use the words practical, because I believe that when we language labor with its stages, it is a very practical experience. That is what happens. I mean, if you look at the textbook, you know, the clinical textbook, labor is described as the expulsion of the contents of the uterus. And anyone who's had a baby knows it's much, much more than that, all right? And therefore, though, the language that we're using and the breaking it up into boxes that you're talking about is very much akin to the expulsion of the products of the uterus. It's not really describing the deeper transformative journey that a woman goes through. And so I appreciate the practical, but I also appreciate something much more holistic, hence that's what we've created, a holistic stages of birth.
Right, to bring everything together. And the transformation is huge. I've always said that birth has to be an intense process, because you have to have a physical manifestation that reflects the immense transformation that's happening inside you.
Oh, right, you are. Yes, I totally agree.
It can't just be one more day. It has to, like, well, you just had a baby and then you're done. No, it's what's happening inside of you is so monumental that there's got to be an outside representation of that. But in our Western cultures and the way we've gone about birth moved away from the home and moved away from midwives and into a clinical setting. And in many ways, it made a lot of things safer, of course, and we've benefited from many of it. But we've also missed and forgotten a lot of information, because I'm sure 100 years ago, well, I'm trusting that 100 years ago or more, you know, midwives didn't view birth as stages and dilation and wait, let me check you to see if you're fully dilated to give you permission to push.
Right. Yes, you're right. These are very clinical concepts of doing procedures on women. In the U.S., for instance, when we came across this, you know, midwifery renaissance back in the like the 70s and 80s and so on, we had this idea that births, you know, midwifery had been lost, which is not really true. Midwifery was held in this country for years and years by the granny midwives, the Black African-American granny midwives who practiced in the South. And their last school closed in the early 60s, they were trained, these midwives, by the health department. But it's interesting that they did no clinical procedures. They never touched a woman in labor, ever. They didn't check her cervix, obviously. They didn't coach her to push vehemently based on, you know, the dilation of her cervix. They never touched a woman. They just used what I would consider holistic and practical skills to help a woman navigate through her labor. And then after the birth, the only clinical thing they did was to cut the cord. So you are absolutely right that labor has proceeded from the beginning of time, I would dare say, without the need to use a lot of clinical techniques that are now the mainstay of most women's births. Okay. And to be perfectly honest, I don't see vaginal exams going away anytime soon. I don't see hospitals necessarily giving up electronic fetal monitoring, different things like that. But I do see that with a new language, a language of more of the heart, we can use technology with more of a heart. And that's something that I would definitely like to see happen. And I would like to see a more holistic stages of birth bring that realm to the hospitals. Technology with a heart.
I love that. The technology with the heart. And I know we will get to the stages, but this is just sparking so many questions in my head. How can a mom that, you know, somebody who's pregnant right now, listening to this and has everything set into place and will be birthing in a hospital, how can they bring into their birth more heart? Because that technology is already there.
Well, that's a really good question. And I feel this way. It's not impossible at all. Even though it, you know, even though you're up in the air amongst all this technology, how can you use it in a way that suits what kind of birth you want? So I would like to say that there is a golden word that I would love for every single mom and dad and birth goer, as it were, doula, to know, and that is the word physiologic. Okay, because there's a movement afoot in the clinical medical model to wonder what would it be like if we left women alone and didn't insist that they push or didn't need them to get in any particular position or just left them to what their own intuitive response to labor would be. If you want something like this, you want, once again, to use the language that the medical community knows, and that word is physiologic. So now, any woman with her doc or when she goes to the hospital can ask for a physiologic birth. Most caregivers know what she means. She means a birth in which I'm allowed, as the mother, to do what is just occurring to me during my labor. If I want to get up, if I want to go in the water, if I want to go in the bathroom, no, I don't want to push. No, I don't really want any, augmentation of labor. But you have to use this golden word, physiologic, because then the establishment, the medical establishment knows that you know what you're talking about. All right. And are much more inclined to get it. Another thing I would say, too, is ask for what you really need and make it simple. What you really need is a physiologic labor. You can let go of a lot of, you know, I don't want this and I don't want that and I don't want this and I don't want that. And just boil it down to, I want a physiologic labor, and I'm so glad to be in this hospital, and I appreciate everyone who comes in and out and facilitates that for me. That is, to me, the supreme birth plan, using the golden word and also undergirding everything with a sense of gratitude and humility, even for your caregivers. How does that sound?
That sounds great. And I love it because it is. It's a physiological process. It's not a medical event. And they know that. It just happens in a medical facility most of the time, you know, 98% of the time. So I love using a medical word to get your point of view across.
Yes. And along with that comes using then technology appropriately, using it physiologically, using it when it's needed, ultimately using it with a heart.
Absolutely. So let's walk through these stages, the holistic stages. Yeah.
Well, I do have to say that practically everything I've learned sitting at the feet of women giving birth. Okay. And I preface the holistic stages of birth by kind of giving a shout out to these women and families. Many of them in my early years were having large families. So naturally, I'm a young midwife. I've had two births. I'm going to be sitting with a woman who's having her seventh baby. What am I going to teach her? Nothing. I'm going to sit at her feet and I'm going to watch how women give birth. So I'm happy to say that I feel like this knowledge comes right from the physiology, if you will. It comes from the many wonderful people that I've worked with who, because they seem to have a handle on birth. These women knew how to give birth. They've done it more than I did. And so I would just basically kind of watch them. I would be willing to kind of sit in the background. They asked me to do that. They would be like, in ways, not using these words, but in ways like, we've got it, okay? And so as I watched women give birth, as I sat at their feet, I began to see things that I was kind of sure that a lot of other people weren't seeing, even some of the midwives of my generation. And what I saw were things that I then coalesced into different stages of labor. So I start out with the word embarking because I feel like it's a journey. And I also feel like everyone embarks in a very different way. Some people nest and they clean the house and they reupholster the furniture and they clean all the cupboards and curtains. And other folks just kind of, I don't know, they grab a toothbrush and a blanket and off they go. It's very interesting watching how people embark on a journey that they are definitely coming back from in a very transformed manner. And I would have to say that one of the things that I saw that there's no mention of in our clinical stages of labor would be something that I would call the veil. And I've used some language that may sound metaphorical, but it's really not, okay? And I want to explain this concept to you about the veil. I find that there's this stage between like early labor, you know, pre-labor, embarking, early labor, mom is kind of in the foothills. And then there's this place where the journey gets real, where it's like, okay, I'm ready to take on the mountain. I'm out of the foothills. And what I see is that there's a moment there or a time there, and I call it the veil. And I find that that is something that is remarkable. It's something to remark on. It's something for a caregiver to notice that a woman has transited from her early labor into what we would call, if we use the practical stages, her active labor. And I noticed that when I would go into someone's home, I gave up vaginal exams really quickly. Many women were like, we don't need that, you know? And so I thought, well, I wonder, you know, sometimes I would come in and I would be like, I wonder where she is in her labor. And then the most amazing thing happened. I was given, I'm just going to call it an aura. And what I mean is I was given a very specific way to know where she was in her labor, whether she was still in early labor or whether she had transited into a more active phase and what her cervix was doing. And what would happen would be like, I would see like little flecks of gold in the air. And at first it unnerved me because I'm not really the kind of person that sees those things. But then I began to, what I realized is that when I would see something in the air like that, the very air in a woman's home or hospital room had changed. And I knew something had opened. I knew she had crossed over something. So I call this the veil. And I began to ask other caregivers, do you have any like sign or aura that a woman has, you know, is clearly now in her more active phases of labor? I call it on the mountain. And midwives and doulas would say to me things like, oh, yes. I mean, when I go in the room, I can tell that a woman is in active labor because of the smell in the room. And I would say, what kind of smell? And they would say, it's like a tang in the air. You can just smell it. And it'd be like fascinating. And then another woman said, oh, I don't see gold. Everything has this reddish cast to me. And I know she's crossed over. She's in active labor. And then a woman said, well, you know what? It's not anything I smell or see, it's a buzzing sound. If something happens, there's a sound in the air. It's like a low buzzing sound. And I know that we're in a different realm. And then one woman said, oh, it's the air quality to me. It's like when I come in the room, I can feel the air has changed. It's like more dense. I can almost feel it. So I'm speaking to very intelligent women who have been to birth, who are confirming that there are other ways of understanding and knowing the journey of birth, that help a caregiver, if you will, understand what particular point a woman is on her journey. So I love the veil. I use that as the point at which a woman crosses over from her embarking stages into the journey, all right, the steep journey, as it were, of labor and being on the mountain.
Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink, thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting, with just one set of filters from their classic purifier making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using AquaTrue water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my AquaTrue. AquaTrue also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com, that's AquaTrue.com, and enter code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL. Tell me if this sounds familiar. You've taken gorgeous photos of your baby or your kids, and then when you want to share them, it is a pain either trying to find the photos or figuring out the group text that they should go to, and then also remembering that, say, Aunt Helen only does email, so you need to send her image separately. Or, like in my case, where my husband is a photographer who takes magnificent photos that I rarely actually get to see because they live on his phone or end up scattered in text messages that I can't easily find. Enter the Family Album app, which was created to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with your loved ones. Basically, it's a personal space for your family's memories without third-party ads or unwanted eyes, and with a bunch of fabulous features. It automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and easily see how your child has grown. And you can also order 8 photo prints every month to be delivered to your home. The Family Album app also has unlimited storage. Plus, it's totally free. Yep, no more worrying about running out of space or being bombarded by third-party ads. So, to all the parents out there still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, level up your family photo game for free and securely with the Family Album photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, all in one word, and download the app to start creating your shared photo legacy. And even if you're not seeing things in the room or hearing a buzzing, or you can I find you can also just look at the person. Totally. You can see they're in a different place because they're not chatty and asking if you can, you know, if her partner remembered to bring up the bag.
Absolutely.
You know, she's in it. Their sounds change. If you ask them something, they go, I don't know. And when the I don't know stage starts, like, okay, great. You keep on not knowing. You go not knowing.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's almost silly to feel like we need some kind of signpost to let us know where a woman is at, in the sense that they're always there. It's just a matter of aligning with a woman, all right? And aligning with where she is in this process that gives you all the information that you need, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I see that women will cross over, and for some women, that's a very dramatic moment even. It's like, okay, saying, okay, bring it. I can do this. Bring it. And then I see women, sometimes I call it on the mountain or between the worlds, where I see exactly what you've mentioned, that a woman goes into a state of being where she becomes much, much less chatty, and she becomes much more deep. And I feel that it's very difficult to really understand where a woman goes in labor without a certain articulation of what I call brainwave patterns. I know we've done a lot on the hormonal aspects of pregnancy and birth, but in the holistic stages of birth, I introduce the whole concept of the neurological perspective, if you will, of brainwave patterns and altered states of consciousness. And I feel that for us not to understand that there are identifiable altered states of consciousness that women go into is to sort of miss something about a labor and not be really aligned with it. So I always teach labor and birth and pregnancy, the whole childbearing continuum, really, if you breastfeed or all of that, is not generally taking place in ordinary consciousness. It's taking place in a various other levels of consciousness that are determined by what happens to your brainwaves. And when we go into altered states of consciousness, which we do all the time. I mean, if you are sleeping, you're in an altered state of consciousness. You're not dead, but you're not in ordinary reality. But pregnant women have this ability, this mastery about them, to be in other states of consciousness with their brainwaves slowing down and still be lucid, all right, and not be asleep. And this is pretty amazing, because when your brainwaves slow down, and we do name them, we call them beta, alpha, theta, and delta states. When your brainwaves slow down, what happens is that you get the opportunity to process the information that you receive. In ordinary reality, it's just coming in too fast. But in these altered states of consciousness, you can extract the content and the meaning of the information that comes to you. And this is what women are doing in labor. They're dropping down into their more intuitive, more instinctual, more perspective states. All right. And they're navigating their labor from these places rather than from what we would consider ordinary thinking reality. And if you can imagine, well, I mean, what are the values of being in different states of consciousness? Well, clearly, you expand your perspective. What that means is that you have more information, and it has more content and more meaning. So it's odd to me to see a woman in an expanded state of perspective being managed by someone in ordinary reality. There is a whole disconnect right there. See, I believe that caregivers should be very comfortable and conversant with altered states where your brainwaves slow down naturally, physiologically, and be able to navigate a woman's labor with her in those places. And what you will see is that in those places, women have very instinctual responses to the unfolding of labor. We're all capable of instinctual responses. And what you will see is that labor, birth itself, is an instinctual process. And as it unfolds, women really do know what to do and how to do it if they are able and facilitated by their caregivers to allow those altered, expanded perspectives to come forth. Most women today, being managed in a very ordinary reality state, want to be very civilized. They want to be very like on it. They want to know what's going on. But actually, all of that unhooks when you are in your instinctual place. And it's just my opinion that when you are coming from an instinctual and fulfilled perspective, you are much safer, really, than you are being managed by someone who's coming from a totally different perspective.
Hmm.
All right. I think this is so important for us to learn.
Yeah. Because with the vaginal checks and with the monitoring and all that, what we're trying to do is understand what's going on, right? As much as we can with the tools that we have, with medicine that we have, because there's no other way for us to know otherwise, quote unquote. So we just want to make sure everything's all right.
And you know, some of the best nurses and docs and caregivers and midwives are people who instinctively know, oh, she's fine. Or, no, we shouldn't disturb her right now. Or, no, she'll be okay. Or, no, give her another hour. Do you see what I mean? Our caregivers who also go into that aligned, instinctive, kind of deeper, slow your brainwaves down state make, I think, some of the best caregivers because they are in alignment with what a mom is doing. Now, we don't articulate this in our culture. We don't say caregivers should be able to go into altered states of consciousness because, first of all, we are scared of altered states of consciousness, really. We associate them with people being out of control. Yet, that is the truth. They are out of control of the ordinary mind. They're not out of control, but I feel like there's a long-standing fear of people not being in control, if you will. And I get that. I do. When someone is not in ordinary reality, very often the things that you are doing in ordinary reality don't mean anything to them, have no place in what's happening here, and would just as soon go in the bathroom and lock the door, right? So not to be annoyed by those things anymore.
And I think what what you're talking about, I mean, different people have been studying this from different angles and bringing together sort of calling it with different words. But, you know, we speak about labor land. It's the same thing. It's an altered state of consciousness that you're just calling it with a different word. Or you have,
absolutely,
you know, Michelle Adant talking about going into your primal brain and shutting off your neocortex and going into the primal brain, because that's the part of the brain where the hormones are released and where also, you know, the emotions live. And meditation also gives you those deeper states, such as the alpha and theta and delta.
Yes.
There's a lot of support to this from lots of different angles. But I think what I want to talk a little bit about right now is back to your saying about how we want to control things. I find right now we have such powers of control of so many things in our lives. We can go to the store and get the red shirt with the bow, with the red polka dots, not the blue, but the red polka dots on the left shoulder. We can find that. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's that level of immense control that we have in our day-to-day lives. And the fact that we haven't experienced labor, so it's a scary process that we really don't want to let go. And it's so tough because it's a process that you have to get through one way or another, but the way you get through it is by letting go. So let's talk a little bit about that anxiety and fear that people have going into labor of the process that they're so unfamiliar with. What can you say to them to try to help through this process?
Well, I have always told women and students and anyone else who asks me that transformation is very valuable. We want to evolve. Ultimately, I think it is a deep need in us to evolve. Mm. And we will through transformation. And here's the catch. Most transformation happens outside your comfort zone. So think about that. Most transformation, whether it's birth or some other epiphany that you have had or some other amazing rite of passage that you've gone through that has brought transformation, it's usually happening outside, at the edge of, at the very least, and then outside your comfort zone. Okay, I think if we embrace this understanding and realize it happens for everybody. Everybody's outside their comfort zone for the most part when we're giving birth. All right. And that can be a very safe place for you because you go there all the time. You practice all the time going outside your comfort zone. When I tell women this, it's like, oh, okay, I can make an alliance with that. I realize that it's going outside my comfort zone. And I realize that that makes sense to me, that transformation happens there. So that's the first thing, making an alliance with where you're going and knowing that it's totally okay to go there. All right. I think a lot of the fear comes in, truly, when a woman knows that she's going outside of her comfort zone and doesn't trust the people on the other side. Another thing that I feel like really enhances losing your anxieties is trusting your caregiver. And I just have to say that for many, many of the women that I have seen over the years, their most trusted caregiver is their doula. Their doula is their anchor. Their doula gets this part of it. Okay. Their doula is not necessarily trying to compare them to a standard. I mean, God knows I love midwives and I love doc. I'm very grateful for anyone who is considerate and conscious and wants to make things better for women. But I also realize that doulas bring in what women really, really care about. And that is the psychological and emotional effects of this journey that they're taking. And what I see is that over the years now, midwives and docs have taken care of the physical aspects. Many midwives, of course, have an emotional and psychological relationship, but I'm also feeling that it's the doula. It's the doula that a woman looks to really be the trusted companion. And so I'm calling doulas to also really know that you are a woman's anchor, be comfortable with altered states, and be someone that she can trust. And I think that goes a long way to allay the fears that a woman has, knowing that she's going to go outside of her comfort zone, knowing that she has a trusted individual who's got her back and that she can look at any time for reassurance. I also feel that the fears that we go in, the fears of being out of control, give yourself to your pregnancy. We have this idea that pregnant women are like spacey. We call it pregnant mind, or like, you know, comedians make jokes out of kind of like, oh, and my wife is pregnant, so you know what that means. Mm-hmm. We don't have a reasonable thought in the house, that kind of thing. There's a reason for that. That's really true. All right. And not in the way that a woman isn't reasonable. It's more like, you're right. She's not in ordinary reality. She is practicing. She is learning mastery over these 9 months. Okay. To be able to let go. All right. Just to let go. And people like Odont, Michel Odont, whom I really value his work. He got it when he said, with pregnancy, we, you know, in the hospital that he worked at, he got rid of the exam rooms. There was only one, and you only went to an exam two or three times, maybe, during your pregnancy. What did you do? He bought a piano, and he hired a rockin' grandma. He put out a buffet of good foods. He gave a 20-minute lecture, and then everybody danced. Why? Because that takes you out of the thinking mind. You enjoy your pregnancy. You allow these other states of being to be real for you in pregnancy, so that when you go in labor, you'll dance. Okay? I feel like a lot of the testing and the, you know, here's what I feel. I feel like there are so many caregivers who would gladly spend an hour with you doing testing, when honestly, that hour would be better spent taking a walk, having a snack, having a cup of tea, chatting, okay? I feel like as caregivers, you know, I feel like what women need to do is to demand or expect more, maybe different, more and different of their caregivers. And I know that right now, in the world, much of caregiving that happens to the pregnant woman is basically caregiver directed. But I'd like to tell women that you can direct your care. And the more that we do, the more that women become self-directed, the more caregivers will listen. All right. And okay, there'll be a few at first, and then more, and then more. And finally, you know, the 100th monkey, you'll have women all over wanting to take their power and wanting to direct their care. Now, maybe not in my lifetime. And I know that you're asking me, like, well, what do we do now? All right. So I just feel that, you know, have a doula, have a trusted doula. Hear birth stories of women who've had wonderful experiences. Women who have transformed. I really feel that these are the things that we do to allay fears are generally not the things that we can analyze. All right. Oftentimes we cannot analyze our fears away. So what do? Instead of being, you know, instead of keeping those fears in the thinking mind, take them to the deeper states, because in your deeper states of theta and delta, you can know. It's not about thinking. It's not even about feeling. It's about knowing. And you can know that this journey will open untold worlds to you. You can know that your baby will bring you so much happiness. You can know that you're going to have a hard labor, but that you will make it through it, and you'll have a doula. All right. Or your caregiver will be someone that you love and trust. So those are a few things that I feel like we can do now.
Yeah, those are all fantastic. I, of course, love the doula part, being a doula, but I can relate to that trust, to we take care of the emotional, because we don't have to do anything medical. That is not our job.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is specifically the emotional and the comfort. Yeah.
And for the most part, you can tell your doula anything. It doesn't go on a chart anywhere. It doesn't go on her record. You see what I mean? Your doula is your confidant. And I think that's what pregnant women need more than testing.
And it doesn't have to be about, you know, whether your feet are swollen. It's rarely whether your feet are swollen, but it's more, yeah, I'm having this issue with my partner. I'm feeling this way. And now this happened and they just want to need a good cry.
Totally. I so agree with you. Yes. Thank you.
Yes. No, thank you. So, and okay, let's get back to the holistic stages. We were on the mountain. Sorry to like big detour there, but I thought it was important.
Oh, good. Me too. Okay. So then I see something else happen. I guess in modern parlance, we call it transition, you know, when a woman gets very close to the top of the mountain, or very close to her cervix actually being completely pulled up into the upper uterine segment, opening the way for a baby. And there's this moment of truth. And I call this place the summoning. And I call this place the summoning because I have watched women get to this place and knowing that there's nothing that I can really do for them. You know, I mean, I can be here, I can be a presence with them, I can have their back, but I can't change the nature of their contractions. Okay. But what I can do is witness them. And I do. And what I have seen from many of the early women that I worked with was something really surprising for me because, you know, as a young midwife, I felt like, well, we need to support women. We need to help them up the mountain. You know, and it's when it's really tough when they say, I can't do this anymore. Then we have to do even more for them. And what I realize is, not necessarily at all. The best thing that I can do for someone is witness them and allow them to have what I call their summoning. I see women in this place where they feel that they have nothing left, no reserves left, and they can't do it. I see them do this thing that I call make an act of will. And I see them gather together every single molecule of who they are, physically, emotionally, spiritually, psychically, mentally, socially, every bit of them. I see them, they just gather it together into this really solid core of who they are, and they make an act of will, and they go to full dilation. They go through their contractions. They go to the top of the mountain. And I have come to value this time in a woman's labor. It's usually pretty short, but it is so important because we all need to learn how to make an act of will. An act of will is not an affirmation. It's not an intention. It is an act of will. And a mother will make acts of will on behalf of her children her whole life long. And I feel like this is where we get imprinted to do this. Some people have, in their first labor, before their labor, they have never made an act of will before. All right? But when you make an act of will, is it going to happen? Yes, it is. And I see women climb that mountain, open their cervixes, and be summoned. They summon themselves. Some of the people I would work for would tell me, God summoned them now to the top of the hill or to carry through. It's a beautiful thing. And it is something that I have learned not to interfere with because I would never want to step in and distract a woman from making an act of will because she will do that. She will. And then when she makes that act of will, oh my God, Adriana, something happens that I wish all women could know. A woman gets to, metaphorically speaking, the top of the mountain. Physically speaking, her cervix and lower uterine segment have been all pulled up. And when she gets to the top of the mountain, right, what happens? It stops. She is in the eye of the storm. We don't have a stage of labor called the quietude. I call it the quiescence, or the quietude happens. Some very astute doulas and nurses are noticing that there is a point in the labor after transition when the contractions seem to slow down. And when I was a young midwife, I was taught to not let that happen. To tell her, come on now, you're stalling out. Come on, we need to augment your labor. Come on now, don't lose it. Come on, let's push. And I realized, no. There is another stage of labor happening right here. I call it the quiescence, the quiet. There is about 20, 30 minutes of average where the labor seems to quiet down. It would look like it's stalled. It would look like it's stopping. It is physiology.
You're going to love this because during my training, we did get taught about this and they call it the rest and be thankful phase. And it's that. It's a rest and be thankful because you're getting a break from all this intensity.
And sometimes it's quick. Sometimes a woman will be looking for her break and it's only 5 minutes. And sometimes it lasts an hour or even two. And it is so important because she is now completely open. That she'll never be this open again unless she has other children. All right. And this is a very deep, deep altered state. I feel that a woman often goes into a trance. She'll nap. She'll trance. She'll just kick back. And I believe that something is being downloaded into this woman. All right. Yes, it's a rest. But look, if you climbed a hill, okay, and it took every ounce of everything, it took an act of will to get to the top, and you got to the top, you wouldn't just run right back down the other side, and you wouldn't just rest up either. You would look at the view.
And just like in birth, you would stop to look at the view in this rest and be thankful phase. We are going to stop and give you some time to think about all that Wapio said and look at the view and analyze it and let it sink in. And then next week, we're going to come back and pick up right where we left off. I also wanted to mention that the rest and be thankful phase that I learned about during my doula training was originally coined by Sheila Kissinger, and that it was Pam England who originally coined the phrase Laborland. I hope you enjoyed this first part of the episode with Wapio Diane Bartlett, who is an independent elder midwife that's been involved in the realm of birth since the mid-80s. Wapio founded and directs the Matrona programs, where she teaches about quantum midwifery and the holistic witnessing of birth to return it to the family. You can find Wapio on Instagram at Wapio_and_the Matrona, or learn more at thematrona.com. And Matrona is spelled M-A-T-R-O-N-A and means midwife in Spanish. If you want to connect with us, you can do so on Instagram at Birthful Podcast. And in fact, if you're not driving, why don't you take a screenshot of this episode right now and post it to your stories, sharing your biggest takeaway from the episode? Maybe you didn't yet know about the deep brainwave states that happen during birth. Make sure to tag at Birthful Podcast so we can see it and amplify it. You can find the in-depth show notes and transcript of this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn about my birth and postpartum preparation classes and download your free postpartum preparation plan. Also, if this podcast is a key part of your planning for birth and it's been an incredible resource for you, the best way to support us is by taking any one of my perinatal classes, doing one of my doula workshops, or trying out some of the wonderful products made by our sponsors. This is what allows us to continue doing this work. Birthful is created and produced by me, Adriana Lozada, with production assistance from Asia Plotty. Thank you so very much for listening to and sharing Birthful. Be sure to follow us on Good Pods, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and just everywhere you listen. And then come back for more ways to inform your intuition.